in his most recent book, Earthen Vessels, Hopeful Reflections on the Work and Future of Theological Education, Dan Elshire, who is the executive director of the Association of Theological Schools, not only ponders the future of theological education, but in this short book articulates a case for what we are to be about in this place. But in the beginning of the book, he offers a few autobiographical reflections about his own seminary experience, and here's what he writes. Quote, "More than any other educational institution I have attended, seminary changed me. Theological education is formative and in many cases transformative. It weaves together two powerful human activities, believing and learning, into a common cloth. Seminary affected parts of me that other schools never touched. I did not realize how much it impacted me at the time, but the longer I work in ministry, the more I find myself going back to seminary experiences that defined reality, defined me, and defined Christian faithfulness. Often when I gather with Matt and other alumni from this seminary, they speak a very similar language. They speak of learning and believing and learning as the strands of a cloth that have been woven together during their sojourn in this place. But without fail, they will always say something about the people in this place. In some way, perhaps too difficult to articulate, the people were this third strand that were woven into this cloth. Like believing and learning, the people aided them, they transformed them in ways that defined reality, that defined them, and that defined Christian faithfulness. In your time at Truett, there will be a great focus on learning. After all, we are one of the very few seminaries embedded within a major research university. Learning is critical to who we are. It is critical to our mission. But there will also be great focus on strands of formation and transformation. After all, we are a place that takes very seriously the call each has received and the calling we have received together as the people of God. We learn best when we live in community. We believe best when in community, and it is in community that we discover best what it means to be the people of God. Most all of you, I'm sure, are familiar with Dietrich Bonhoeffer, having completed his doctorate at the age of 21, Bonhoeffer made his way to the United States for further study and for a faculty fellowship at the Union Theological Seminary in New York. After a short time there, he returned to Germany and found the German evangelical church had fallen under sway of the Nazi movement. Bonhoeffer and others began organizing a group called the Confessing Church, a group of Christians that were clearly at odds with what the church state had become. When things grew worse under Nazi pressure, Bonhoeffer accepted a call to a pastorate in London, with the hope that while in London, he could leverage ecumenical pressure to somehow change what was happening in Germany during that time. After 2 years in London, he was invited to go to India to study with Gandhi about nonviolent protest. But in that moment, as Nazi suppression of the church intensified, members from the Confessing Church reached out to Bonhoeffer, asking him if he would instead return home and lead an underground seminary to train ministers of the Confessing Church. And so he turned down the chance to go to India and to study with Gandhi. And instead, he found his way back to Germany, and there he helped to found this clandestine seminary at Finkenwald. And it was based on that life there, that shared life in that small seminary community, that Bonhoeffer wrote his small book, Life Together. Bonhoeffer writes in the opening pages of that peace. Christianity means community through Jesus Christ and in Jesus Christ. No Christian community is more or less than this. Whether it be a brief single encounter or the daily fellowship of year, Christian community is only this. We belong to one another only through and in Jesus Christ. The remainder of his book focuses on believing and learning, on learning and believing, but the notion of community permeates every page. We belong to one another only through and in Jesus Christ. That sentence has lingered with me all summer. I've turned it over time and time again in my mind. What does it mean to belong to one another through and in Jesus Christ? What does it mean to live in this kind of shared life? You see, while I believe that statement, I rarely tend to the meaning of it for my own life, much less for the lives of the communities in which I am a part. You see, our text today appears at the start of a series of farewell addresses in the Gospel of John. And John 14 is often noted as the first mention of this allos, parakletos, this another advocate. But I also would like today to suggest that this text calls us, as disciples of the risen Christ, to enter into the kind of shared life envisioned by Bonhoeffer and experienced and practiced by those in that underground seminary in Finkenwald. You see, John 14 calls us to a new way of living, even now, predicated upon our commitment to Jesus. Three times in this short text, we are told to love Jesus. Those of you who've had scripture, you know all throughout the Old and the New Testament, the theme of loving God reverberates from one end to the other. And when the community fails to love God rightly, the prophets call them back to their very first love. And while one may note the repeated call to love God across both testaments, one is hard-pressed to find language in the New Testament that calls us to love Jesus. In fact, only 12 times in the New Testament are we told to love Jesus, 6 of them here in the Gospel of John. But we should be clear about the nature of this kind of love, lest we trail off into some kind of sentimentality and emotionalism. You see, the Gospel of John, the writer of the Gospel of John, carefully embeds within his narrative references and allusions, metaphors and images picked up from the Old Testament. And this language of love is no different. Throughout the Old Testament, the word love is used in covenant language. And even among political parties in the ancient Near East, it was not uncommon for one kingdom to speak of the other in terms of love, political commitment, indicating a binding covenant. And just as God called down from Sinai, demanding his people to love him exclusively, here we see in John 14, Jesus demanding exclusive love, unbending love, a love that at times calls us to live in radically new ways. Henry Nouwen knew something of this kind of love. Having taught early in his career at Notre Dame and then moving on to teach at the Divinity School at Yale, finally assuming a very prestigious post at Harvard, he knew something about the academic life. He knew something about moving forward, but it was his next move that became most surprising. He was to work at a community named La Arche. It was a community for the mentally handicapped. He left the hallowed halls of Harvard to enter into the sacred ordinariness of community life. In commenting on this abrupt transition to a small, relatively obscure community, he spoke of life and he said, "The question is not how many people will take you seriously. It's not how much are you going to accomplish, and it is not can you show me results. The question is, are you in love with Jesus? He continued, to live a life that is not dominated by the desire to be relevant, but is instead safely anchored in the knowledge of God's first love, we are to be mystics. Christian leaders cannot simply be persons who have well-formed opinions about the burning issues of our day. Their leadership must be rooted in the permanent, intimate relationship with the incarnate Word, Jesus. Did you hear that last line? Our leadership must be rooted in a permanent, intimate relationship with the incarnate Word. Or put differently, we might say, our leadership must be rooted in the love of Jesus. Or even more simply, we might say, our lives must be bound to Him. This year at Truett, the focus of chapel for both the fall and the spring will be on the theme of the people of God. I want to encourage you all to be here. I know we're all busy. We all have way too much work to do. But if we are not careful, we will fool ourselves into believing that the work of formation and transformation happens only in isolation. As we come together week after week, you see we are doing work, critical work, life-giving work. The word liturgy actually means the work of the people. And so in our gathering and in our worship, in our liturgy, we are sitting side by side, sharing life with those who love Jesus, with those who have bound themselves to Him and to one another in this place. But we also need each other in this shared life, because in the midst of the learning, in the midst of our believing, there will be days when we each will find it difficult to bind ourselves to Christ. There will be days when the call seems faint, and there will be days when the commitment seems weak. But Bonhoeffer reminds us this is precisely why we need community. We need each other, he says, because there will be days when the Christ in our own heart is weaker than the Christ in the word of a brother or sister. There will be days when our own hearts are uncertain, the hearts of a sister and brother sure. You see, to live a life rooted in the incarnate Word, it is not an easy task. To bind ourselves to Jesus is work, but it is work that we can and must do together to be the people of God. No doubt among the early Christians, some must have wondered, can we still love Jesus when He's gone? Can we still love Jesus when He's gone? In her fine work on the Gospel of John, Gail O'Day explains what might be called a qualified yes to that answer. She writes, the disciples can still love Jesus, but neither by clinging to a cherished memory of Him, nor by retreating into their private experience of Him. Rather, they can continue to love Jesus by doing His works and by keeping His commandments. Three times in this text, Jesus indicates that those who love Him will keep His commandments, will do His word. To be sure, Jesus is no legalist, but Jesus does know something about formation and transformation. As we do the works of Jesus, as we keep the commandments of Jesus, we slowly take on the shape of the cruciform life. Throughout the Gospel of John, the miraculous works of Jesus are not called miracles. They are called signs. They are signs that point people to the eruption of God into the world. In his small book of prayers, Michael Coyce reflects on one scene in the Passion narrative, and he writes, he fell. For a moment he staggered, and then he fell prostrate. God in the dust. And so, Lord, I follow You, setting out with confidence, and now I have fallen. I thought I had given myself irrevocably to you, but I caught sight of a flower on the footpath. I left you. I left the cumbersome cross, and here I am off the road, possessed of a few faded petals and my solitude. And the others, Lord, pass along the road, broken and exhausted, and the crosses are in the making and the backs are bending. I am no longer there to fight evil and to help men to drag their loads. I am off the road. Lord, help me not only to follow after you, but to keep steadily on, and keep me from sudden weaknesses that leave me stupefied and empty, far from the places where you are shaping the world. Jesus said to his disciples, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. If you love me, you will join me in the places where I am shaping the world. If you love me, you will all become signs, signs that point people to the eruption of God into the world. If you all love me, on occasions, you will even join me in the dust. If you all love me, your life, even your shared life together, will become a cruciform life. So let us return to our initial question. What does it mean to belong to one another through and in Jesus Christ? Surely it must mean that even as we bind our lives to Christ, we bind ourselves to one another. And as we seek to love Christ, we become a community of people who collectively embody a cruciform life. I admit, such ambitions seem far, far too lofty for us. Our lives are too busy to love God, much less too busy to love one another in such a way. Our schedules simply demand too much of us. And so we find ourselves throwing up our hands, admitting that such loving and that such living are well nigh impossible for us. And here is the gospel for today. Jesus knows that. And that is why he says, I will not leave you orphaned. I am coming to you. In the ancient world, after the death of a great teacher, the disciples would have been metaphorically termed orphans, a term that was applied to the disciples and followers of Socrates upon his own death. But you see, this teacher, this Jesus, is unlike any other teacher. All other teachers left their disciples as orphans, but Jesus announces, I will send this Allos Parakletos, I will send this another advocate. And Jesus announces, there will be no orphans for those who bind themselves to him and to his way. Just as Jesus walked alongside, just as Jesus advocated, just as Jesus was a Parakletos for his disciples, he says, I am coming to you and I will send another. You see, Jesus takes these three strands and he knots them into one cord in verse 23. Those who love me will keep my word and we will come to them and we will make our home among them. This is shared life most fully, isn't it? Life shared with one another, but life shared together fully in the presence of God. I suspect there are very few students here today that had the opportunity to sit under the teaching of Dr. Ruth Ann Foster. Sometime walk the halls upstairs and find a scene in one of the pictures where she stands, just to put a name and a face together. She was a founding member of the faculty, and over the course of the years, we as a community watched and lamented and prayed as her health failed and as she finally lost her battle to cancer in the fall of 2006. In preparing for today's address, I happened to come across my journal from 2006. And perhaps like you, occasionally I like to flip back through journals of past years to be reminded of what happened, to be reminded of the journeys that I took and the journeys I did not take in those years. If you'll indulge me, My entry from October 5th, 2006 reads as follows. Ruth Ann passed away a week ago today. Several of us went to visit her on the Sunday before she died. I could not sleep all Saturday night. It would be the first time in many years that I had visited someone, knowing that this would be the final time to exchange words. All night long, the words of Isaiah kept coming to me. Fear not, I am with you. All night long, relentlessly, these words kept coming to me, rolling over and over in my head. The next day, I was rather certain that these were the words I was meant to share with her. As this small, gathered community stood around the bed, laughing and singing and praying, I kept waiting. I kept waiting for a lull in the conversation, for that one moment to utter these words that had been playing over and over in my mind. And the moment never came. Instead, in that moment, I was reminded of a line by Ron Rollheiser in which he says, "The incarnation is not over." He says, "We see the incarnated face of Christ in those around us." And then I looked down at my friend, Ruth Ann. I looked down at the frail, emaciated, cancer-worn face of my friend. And as Ruth Ann looked back at me, I saw the face of the suffering Christ. "Fear not, I am with you," her eyes seemed to say. Christ had made his way to the deathbed again, offering redemption and hope even in the brokenness of a cancer-ridden saint. "I am with you," with Ruth Ann, with me, with my colleagues, and yes, even with the suffering world. You see, when life is shared together, when life is really shared together, we will hear the words of Jesus coming to us, "I will not leave you orphaned." When life is shared together and our lives are embedded in the lives of one another, we hear the words of Jesus, "I am coming to you." And when life is shared together, when we bind ourselves to Jesus and we share in the cruciform life, we hear the words of Jesus, "We will come and make our home with them." Perhaps that is what it means to belong to one another only through and in Jesus Christ. Sharing our lives together, binding ourselves to Jesus, finding our way in the cruciform life, only to discover that the God of the dust is the God in our midst. Maybe that should be our commitment. Maybe that should be our prayer for this year. And so, my friends, as you begin this semester, may the peace of Christ be with you in your learning. May the hope of Christ be with you in your believing. And may the presence of Christ be among us all as we share life together in this place.